Welcome, everyone, to the Interpreter Foundation podcast. This is our second part. I'm Terry Hutchinson. My co-hosts are Kevin Christensen and Mark Johnson. The mission of Interpreter Foundation is to support the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints through faithful scholarship. We make the latest and best scholarship available to you in podcasts, journal articles, books, seminars, films, and scripture roundtables. You can visit us at interpreterfoundation.org and just check it out. Just surf the website. You'll find some fascinating things. And if you like this podcast, please tell your friends about it. Give us a five-star rating. You can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Pocket Casts, Libsyn, or other podcast apps. Now, because the Interpreter Foundation is not owned or controlled by The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, the comments that we make are solely our responsibility. Our discussion topic for this podcast will be miscellaneous, but we do intend to talk about the latest journal article, which is a book review of the study Book of Mormon, edited and put together by Brant Gardner, along with its companion volume, as well as some other things that we'll be talking about. But one of the things we thought we would do now that we're in this podcast format instead of our former radio broadcasts is to take a minute and reintroduce ourselves to the audience. So I thought I would start. My name is Terry Hutchinson. What am I? Oh, yeah, I'm an attorney. I do a lot of other things professionally. I have spent the last 8 years on the school board in Washington County down in St. George. I'm no longer on the school board. Maybe I'll get back more involved in political education or run for political office in education. We'll see. But in the meantime, I'm just enjoying myself. I have been involved with the Interpreter Foundation since 2018. I've been one of the radio co-hosts and have, I think, Kevin, you and I have been together the whole time.
Yes.
It feels longer for you, I'm sure, but anyway, and Mark has been with us for a couple of years. Mark and Kevin will be able to explain their own things. I wrote a book with my father-in-law. It's called The Temple, A Pathway to Heaven. I've reviewed many books for Meridian Magazine, and I have had a daily book review show on the radio in St. George on KDXU radio every day, Monday through Friday, since 1994. I've been involved with radio in one aspect or another ever since 1994. So I enjoy my time with the Interpreter Foundation. It's one of the most rewarding things that I do. I'm married. I have for 43 years to my wife, Janae. We have five children, and we have several in-laws, and then we have eight grandchildren with a ninth one on the way. Our oldest grandson just went in the MTC. So that pretty much sums it up about me. Kevin?
Well, I've been a lifetime member of the church. I grew up in Utah and then did my mission in England. And while I was on my mission, a member loaned me a copy of a book by Hugh Nibley called An Approach to the Book of Mormon, and reading that kind of lit a candle in me. So when I got back from my mission, my wife's brother kind of passed along information about the startup of the farms when it very first started. So I started getting, you know, all of their stuff that I could afford. And I started publishing LDS scholarship in about 1990 or so. I'm a senior, or I've been a technical writer for 41 years, working in California. I was living in California for 11 years, starting my career there, and then got a job transfer to Lawrence, Kansas, where we lived for 10 years. And for the last 21 years, I've been working near Pittsburgh as a senior technical writer for a company called Ansys. And I'm about 2 weeks from retirement, and then we've just moved to Tooele, Utah, which isn't something we saw far off, but it happened very, very quickly. And we live about 14 minutes from my wife's favorite sister. So it's been a good move for us. And I've published about 43 essays. It wasn't something that family culture prepared me for. It just kind of grew out of, I think, that the spark that reading Hugh Nibley lit in me. And every once in a while, I realized that I had something to say, and I would send it out, and almost everything has gotten published. The best known thing I've done, of course, has been Paradigms Regained, a survey of Margaret Barker's scholarship and its significance for Mormon studies. And a year or two ago, I did a couple of retrospectives to look back and see what's happened since then, 20 years since Paradigms Regained. It's been kind of interesting to see what's gone on. And that's about where I am now.
Thank you, Kevin. I would just say that Paradigms Regained is something that changed the way I studied the gospel and the scriptures, and it affected my life very deeply. So it's always been a pleasure for me to work with Kevin over the years. Mark?
My story isn't all that really different from Kevin's as far as getting involved with LDS scholarship. I was on my mission, and there was a book at a member's house called, well, they actually had a pair of books. One was called Rediscovering the Book of Mormon, and the other was called Reexploring the Book of Mormon. Both of these were put out by Farms probably about 1990. While my companion was chumming it up with the family there, I was sitting on the couch and saw those two books on their not coffee table, whatever it is that us LDS people have. It's not a coffee table. You know what
It's
I'm
a
talking about.
jello table.
Jell-O table, exactly, with the carrots, the shredded carrots. So I picked up these books and I was just floored that such a thing existed. It blew me away and really kind of lit this fire in me to gain a better understanding of the scriptures. So after I got after I got home, finished my 2-year mission in Tennessee, I got home and looked up Farms, went and bought one of their books. There's a little postcard inside the book there that says, fill this postcard out and send it in, and we'll send you the catalog. And went and got another book or two, and after a while, decided to make the drive from Salt Lake down to Provo just on my days off. Slide over to the Farms headquarters, meet some folks. I'm just a 21, 22-year-old kid, but I just said, "Hey, what do you got for me? Can I, go run some copies off for you, or do you need to grab something from the library for you?" Or I was just in. I was sold this idea of faithful biblical scholarship and faithful Book of Mormon scholarship just really really took a hold on me. And I, even back then, I was reading some articles on the Book of Mormon and the Exodus pattern there, and I thought, oh, I wonder, they didn't hit this thing. And I kind of typed up a 3 or 4 page essay and sent it off to the Journal of Book of Mormon Studies, and for some reason they liked it and published it in the back of that thing, and I was hooked. So I'm glad to see the Interpreter Foundation come along. I was thrilled to be able to start volunteering again with whatever ways I could do. I started behind the scenes doing editing of the radio shows, and I'd drive down to the station back when the show was broadcasting out of Murray. It was close to home, so I'd drive down there every week and be able to chat with the talent and
We use the word talent loosely, believe me.
Yep, if we had the cameras on, you could see that I used quote air quotes for the talent.
That's technical.
But it was really just a chance to make new friends. So I've loved my association with the interpreter, and it's a thrill to be on the radio. I still we'll be able to eke out an article or two every once in a while, and I've had a couple of things published in the Interpreter Journal. I've done a little bit with Scripture Central with Jeff Bradshaw's help, and I've got a book I'm working on. So that could be fun too. See what
That's
happens.
right. And I will tell you that Mark's work in the journal has been very interesting to me. Both Kevin and Mark have published in the journal, and anybody who has published in the journal will tell you that it is a process. And just to get through that process is quite an achievement. So they're to be well respected for that. And Mark, obviously in his editing, thought, I could do this with my eyes closed, and does often.
It's true. That's another reason why the cameras are off.
That's right. Well, anyway, brothers, tonight we're going to talk about for a minute the article, the recent book review in the journal, which is almost an article in and of itself. It's a longer book review of Brant Gardner's work. Kevin, I was going to ask you, Kevin, if you know this woman, because apparently she's from the Pittsburgh area.
Let me check. Kimberly, no, I don't know her. Let's see what it says. West York, Pennsylvania. Nope, I haven't been there. So I don't
Okay.
know.
I just thought that, that's a good sign that the church is getting so big that even if you're fairly close like that, you wouldn't know
Yep.
them. So, I had the opportunity with Martin Tanner, one of the other co-hosts for the Interpreter podcast, to interview Brant Gardner when we were doing the radio program. And if you want to find that interview, which is about an hour, you can go to the December 31st, 2023 broadcast and find it. I would tell you that we came up with a pull quote from that, and it's frankly a good thing that it wasn't very well publicized, because Brant in that interview called Moroni kind of a hack editor. That's kind of tongue in cheek, but I would say that Brant's work. And we can talk all about it. Brand is actually, isn't he over at the journal now?
I know he's involved. I'm not sure what his role is.
Yeah, I think he's one of the editors now, but he's done some amazing work on the Book of Mormon. His Second Witness, published by Greg Coford Books, is about 15 years old now, I think, or maybe even 17. And it is a six-volume work, totals about 3,300 pages. Of a commentary on the Book of Mormon from a Mesoamerican perspective, and it is phenomenal. I can't speak highly enough about it. You can get it digitally. It's not cheap, but it's a lot cheaper digitally than it is in hardback. And finding all six volumes in hardback is kind of a challenge. I got them when they first came out, and I have never regretted it. They are amazing, and he's done some other work too. And he did something a couple of years ago on Interpreter where, and I think Kevin, you were going to talk about that with his Heartland versus the Mesoamerican.
Yes. Yeah,
So,
he's. Did you want me to start now?
yeah, why don't you go ahead? Well, go ahead and start with the article that was in the journal at first, and then
Okay, yeah.
we'll follow up with his other work.
Okay, yeah. Well, Kimberly Heston's review is a review of a book by Gardner called The Plates of Mormon, a Book of Mormon study edition and its companion volume, engraven upon plates printed upon paper, textual and narrative structures of the Book of Mormon. And so what she's wanting to talk about is that Garner's trying to figure out how we get from the language on the plates to the language that we have in the Book of Mormon. And so he's doing a study of how this could have happened, and just layers of language, layers of meaning, and how it gets from being something that makes sense to a Mesoamerican culture to something that would make sense to Joseph Smith and his readers. And so he's someone who has done translations himself. He knows a couple of different languages, and he knows different cultures, and he knows that there's layers of culture and layers of language and differences in syntax and construction. And so even the notion that when the manuscript of the Book of Mormon, the printers, or rather the original manuscript, shows it says that it The evidence on the pages shows that Joseph is working with groups of like 20 to 30 words at a time, which Garner points out that that has implications for the translation itself, because sometimes different languages have different structures and they put things in different order. And so the idea that Joseph Smith is just flowing along like this, it has implications for just even word construction when the underlying languages and the structures of the languages can be different. And so how do you get from even those groups of 20 words, to have sentences that make sense? And sometimes when Joseph Smith isn't necessarily stopping, at the end of his sentence, but at just at the end of these chunks of words, and it's to have something that comes out so beautifully. So he gives it a lot of thought, and he thinks about layers of translation that not many other people think much about. So it's he's always very rewarding and very thoughtful. He's got a deep background. So it's this review is kind of pointing out some aspects of that.
Yeah, she points out this is really a fairly short review. It's just about 20 pages. There could be so much more said about this work, but it's highly original. And one of the things she points out is that he's one of the few Mesoamerican trained scholars who's really focused on the Book of Mormon. She notes John E. Clarke is another, and Matthew Christensen, I think. Was it Matthew Christensen? Alan Christensen, who translated the Popol Vuh, something that Farms put out several years ago. Those are really the only two with him, and that this is kind of an emphasis for him. And he has his own theories and really strong ideas about it. But this is a excellent work, and she talks and compares it a little bit about some of the other study Book of Mormons that came out the last few years, including Grant Hardy's Annotated Book of Mormon. We've had Grant on the program a couple of times, myself and you guys and Martin Tanner and Kevin. You wrote a long review of that. How do you feel Brandt's work compares with Grant's?
Well, like his whole thing was looking instead, he said instead of looking for the Book of Mormon in Mesoamerica, he wanted to look for Mesoamerica in the Book of Mormon. And he said that completely changed his reading and changed his view of the authenticity of the book, because he just saw so much of Mesoamerica in it. And he was a person who had the background to be able to see it. And so his commentary, Second Witness, was putting it in context. And whereas, say, Hardy is wanting to just look at the plain meaning of the text and try and ignore the background culture it claims for itself, Grant recognizes that the cultural context can make a difference in what you read. And I've been long been a fan of how Grant has done that, bringing that Mesoamerican culture into it and shows when and how it makes a difference in what we see and what we read, and where it'll be something that unless Margaret Barker refers to it as you want to stand where they stood, look where they looked, and see what they saw. And that can be a very big change of perspective from what we start with. And so Grant's books, the six volume commentary, and his book on the Book of Mormon history, and these newer versions where he's just thinking through about the translation process and getting these words across languages and cultures to have something that is what we have in the Book of Mormon. He's got the background and the depth and has been immersed in this for many, many years. So yeah, I'm a big fan of Grant's work.
You know that, well, I'm a fan of both of them. There's Grant and Brandt, and we have to make sure that we don't get the two of them mixed up, because is it possible that one's a pseudonym for the other?
No, they have very different things,
I don't know if I've seen both of them in the same place. That's
Yeah,
how
you're right. It could be like
it's not
Spider-Man or
hasty
something,
on this, yeah.
But it's different approaches, and it makes a difference. And so each will have a different audience that he's speaking to. And Grant Hardy's quite deliberately, he's like speaking to the scholars, but he wants to make it accessible to the saints too. Getting published by Oxford, and his understanding of the Book of Mormon, again, he's trying to bracket historicity, whereas Brandt is embracing historicity.
Yeah. I mean, Grant makes it very plain that he accepts historicity, but that's not the emphasis of the book. And I think that's important. Mark, what has your been what's been your experience with Brandt's work?
I've been quite impressed with it. It's something that has been sorely needed. I think that, well, we've talked about Nibley before, and he was kind of he's the scholar who really set the tone on looking for the ancient Near East inside of the Book of Mormon. And I think that, you know, what Brandt's doing is just as, you know, groundbreaking and valuable as what Nibley's done with the ancient Near East. I only wish that we had more scholars following along in those same footsteps, you know, following the path that Brandt is blazing for us. You know, there's so much interesting, you know, connections that, you know, some scholars have been able to find, you know, based on these Mesoamerican ideas. You can find a lot of them, like at places like, you know, even our interpreter website has, you know, a lot of works by Brandt and other scholars. It's also Scripture Central is another good resource to find items like this. We were mentioning other Mesoamericanists. Mark Allen Wright is another one.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and when we were talking earlier, there was a little video clip. Kevin, if I were not mistaken, I saw Mormon's Codex right behind you.
Yes.
So John Sorensen.
Yeah. Ancient American setting and Mormon's Codex. And that it was actually, Brandt has talked about how his conversation with John Sorensen about, you know, what became an ancient American setting that really kind of helped Brandt ground himself in the Book of Mormon as history, you know, one that you could take seriously in the context it claims for itself. And he's kind of been extending on Sorensen's work.
Yeah. So he's kind of synthesized Second Witness into a couple of volumes. One of them was The Gift and the Power. And I can't remember the other one. There was
that
one about
the translation. And there was another one to do with the Book of Mormon's history.
Yeah.
Yes.
That was called.
It's called Traditions of the Fathers.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's a very good place to start nowadays.
Uh huh. And Kevin, what was the one he did with the Interpreter Foundation? So the journal published several chapters, just like they did with another book we'll talk about in a few minutes by Matt Roper. But he did another one of those, I think.
Yeah.
Where they published several of those, and they're all available for free.
Yep. Let's see. Well, he's also done some. Well, he's got a whole bunch of articles. You know, if you look, he has a lot. He had a book called "Labor Diligently to Write the Making of Modern Scripture." You know, this
that
is
was actually, it. That yeah. was it. That was the one he did.
Like 16 chapters and musings on the making of Mormon's book. So he's you know, lots of blog comments, lots of serious articles, his book. So. He keeps thinking about it. He's not the kind of guy that just recycles the same ideas over and over and over, you know, like some, you know, a couple of the Heartlanders I could think of. But he's trying to, you know, to dig new furrows and to uncover new things. So he's interested in saying new things and seeing new things. And he's also, he doesn't ignore the debates. So
I was going to say he jumps in. He really jumps in.
And like this, he's done a series of, looks like 13 blog articles, blog essays on the Interpreter website on the Heartland versus Mesoamerica. And he gets involved in, you know, when people comment on his essays, he climbs in and comments on what their comments are. And so he's deeply involved and a very bright guy.
Yeah.
And very insightful. So I highly recommend his work.
Yeah, he's really bright. And I always, whenever there's like an interpreter activity, I always make sure I take the opportunity to corner him and to badger him with as many questions as I have. So, and he hasn't shoved me out of the way yet.
Hasn't
so,
shoved you out of the way yet, huh? Well, that's good to know.
Maybe I'm asking the wrong questions. I don't know.
That's right. Yeah, that's
he's
right.
He's great. I can't say speak highly enough of him.
Yeah, the first time I met Brandt was at the Margaret Barker conference, actually, when she came to BYU in 2003. He kind of imposed himself on the conferences. He hadn't been invited, but he kind of He, when he heard her talk on the, that he that she gave a, on what King Josiah reformed, then he started coming to the, you know, just came into the sessions and sat there for the last 3 days.
Yeah. Well, you would have. I missed that one. I was there in Logan when she came out,
Yeah.
but I didn't get to that one. So yeah, I hope he'll be there. We have an interpreter birthday coming up in a few weeks, and hopefully we'll be able to see him then. But Kevin, what else? There's something else that's been published the last several weeks in the interpreter that we wanted to mention.
Oh
Do you
yes, I
remember
wanted to
that?
mention that Matthew Roper has done basically it's a book. He's done, you know, several chapters of a book, and they've been publishing them all in the interpreter. And what he's doing, he's kind of an extension of something John Clark did at the Joseph Smith Conference in Washington, D.C. at the Library of Congress in 2005. And it's looking at the charges of anachronism made against the Book of Mormon, saying, you know, the Book of Mormon can't be correct because this aspect of it or this claim contradicts what we know based on what we know now. And what Matt's doing is he's just looking at these claims through time. So like the concluding chapter here says, okay, there have been 102 claims made about the Book of Mormon, and of those claims, 7 were confirmed, 2 partially confirmed, and 93 unconfirmed. That is, they go against what almost everybody thought. And then he looks at them, you know, 100 years later, and you can see a change. And then he looks at him again, up to the present day, where he says, okay, now we've got more claims, 226 claims. Of those 226 claims, 174 have been confirmed, 31 partially confirmed, only 21 unconfirmed. So you see this tendency over time that the case for the Book of Mormon gets better and better over time. And I think that is profoundly important to understand, you know, to get this perspective and how things have been changing over time. And indeed, there's a couple of there's a passage in Isaiah and in Jeremiah that talk about this, that the Lord is going to, you know, defend his prophets. And there's also a something that David Whitmer reported. He said that initially that the witnesses, you know, were kind of worried about writing their witness, you know, but the Lord, you know, because everything seemed so, you know, of course they knew it was true because of what they'd been experiencing, but they were worried that it was the picture that the Book of Mormon was painting of the civilization in Mesoamerica and in the ancient, you know, Americas was so different than what everybody thought. And the Lord said, no, that the evidence will come forth. And, you know, that shows up, their enthusiasm and appreciation for that shows up when the Lloyd Stevens' book showed up in Nauvoo in 1843, you know, the incidents of travel in Mesoamerica. So they appreciated, yeah, this is the kind of thing that we were told is going to come. And you can see that it keeps getting better over time, and which is something, you know, that I see definitely in my lifetime, that as the I'm 71 years old now, and the case for the Book of Mormon is far better now than I was when I was a kid.
Yeah, same for me. I'm not quite that old, but
Yeah.
getting there. Although Kevin, I think you're going to last longer with interpreter than anybody because you come from a long line, a long-lived line, I should say.
Yeah, my senses were the Dunedain, you know, like Aragorn and the Lord of
Oh, yeah, exactly.
the
At least your mother.
Yeah. Well, Dad was 97 and Mom was 105 when they go.
When they went, and his
Yeah, so
mom
we'll
just
see.
barely went. What, last year?
Last year, yeah.
Yeah, I
Yeah.
remember. So anyway, well, is there anything else that either of you thought about from this week? And then otherwise we'll get together again in a few weeks and have another
Oh, I
chat.
did have that one more thing I wanted to mention. Again, this is a podcast from Thoughtful Faith that I just ran across on YouTube. It's published, I guess, on July 8th and has been viewed now almost 59,000 times already, which I think is pretty amazing. And it's the title of it is "The Book of Abraham: New Research That Proves the Critics Wrong." And it's not really brand new research. It's just kind of reviewing a few things that have been around for a while, but haven't been gotten as much notice as I think they deserve. And he talks about William Shiver's presentations on the Egyptian Kirtland papers, plus Tim Barker's paper on translating the Book of Abraham, the answer under our heads, and then some research by Stephen Smoot and Carrie Milstein, who have have this Egyptological training, so they've got specialist knowledge of things. And it's just a survey of the kind of things that are going on now that you almost never hear the critics talk about, except for if they want to dismiss it without a glance, because it so severely undermines the story they've been telling for about 150 years.
Yeah.
So it's worth a look if you haven't heard this stuff, and it's worth seeing that. Yeah, no, it's nice to see this discussion going on.
Okay. Mark, anything else?
I was thinking about this is just kind of a just can I just do a plug for the Interpreter Foundation? I know I've
You
done
bet.
that earlier on, but I was thinking about the approach that Interpreter takes. It's interesting, the Interpreter Foundation, if you want to just, abbreviate it, it's IF, if. But it brings to mind to me the Council of Jacob from the Book of Mormon, where he says to be learned is good if you can counsel to the, heed to the, or, follow the commandments of God. I think that, the Interpreter Foundation acts kind of as it is. Acts as that if you want to look at it that way, it's kind of that junction between to be learned is good and keeping the commandments of God. The foundation is kind of at the juncture, that middle point. It is a collection of scholars working together, but it's also focused on diligence and faithfulness to the church, and encouraging its members to keep the commandments and to come into Christ. I think it's a I like that verse. I think it's a nice kind of juncture of what the foundation's about.
Well, those are great comments, Mark. Thank you.
That's my plug.
All
There you go.
right. My plug is that I'm still getting ready for an interview Martin Tanner and I are planning with John Turner, who's just written a new biography of Joseph Smith from Yale. I've have really mixed feelings about it. I've talked
Yeah.
about it before. He does some things very well, and then there's some other things where you're going, what? Say what?
Yeah.
But we
And that.
also, my other group, the two Johns, John T and John G, are going to be interviewing Jonathan Stapley. He's got a new book from Oxford about the temple called Holiness to the Lord that
Oh,
is
cool.
really good. And of course, we're going to have some authors on with us too. So I look forward to getting together with you in our new format. Thank you, Kevin. Thank you, Mark. And thank you for listening. Join us, and as well as all the other hosts for various podcasts for the Interpreter Foundation. Just a quick note, any donations will be accepted by the foundation, and they will also, it's a 501c3. And Kevin has one more thing to say, it looks like.
Oh, this is no, this is I'm going to show you after.
Oh, okay. All righty. So we'll edit that part out. But we want to thank you for listening. Please join us again another evening. This is Terry Hutchinson for Kevin Christensen and Mark Johnson. Good night.
Night.